Hi, so I'm here today talking to Jonathan Follett, O'Reilly author, editor of Designing Emerging Technologies, and principal of Involution Studios. John, thanks for joining us today.
Delighted to be here.
So today we're going to discuss emerging technologies in the product design life cycle. So my first question would be, what are some of the ways in which emerging technologies such as 3D printing, additive fabrication, IoT robotics are disrupting the product design life cycle?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. It's a perfect question, right? I really think there is no better time to be a product designer than now, for a number of reasons. In part, a lot of the technologies that you named are sort of all coming to this inflection point at the same time. And when I talk about emerging technologies, sometimes I refer back to the second industrial revolution, where you had a whole bunch of emerging technologies of the time coming together. So you had your automobile, your light bulb, your electric power, your telephone, all sort of coming to the fore at the same time. And that sort of created the modern world, right? That we're living in today. And so when we're talking about product design and new products coming to the fore today, we can see the same thing happening with, whether you're talking about the Internet of Things or robotics or synthetic biology and genomics, or any of those other exciting elements that are all sort of mixing together. So that's one way. You've got all these technologies to play with now. So that's a fantastic reason to be in product design, and that's creating whole new lines of products that we never even thought of. You could have pretty much connected anything now, right? So your connected washing machines, your connected home environments, your connected work environments, your connected gaming environments, your smart cities, your 3D printing, all sorts of different things on demand. So in that way, new technology is really pushing out these new and exciting products. The other way we're seeing disruption in the product design life cycle is because we're also at the same time finding different ways to work together as creative class workers. And what I mean by that is knowledge workers, scientists, designers, engineers. And some of the exciting, I don't know if they strictly fall into the technology realm, but you've got all of the leverage of open source, right? So you've got open source mechanical designs, open source CAD drawings, open source electrical designs that a product designer can leverage to create their new products. So you're doing what Isaac Newton said. He stood on the shoulders of giants. That way he could see farther, right? So you're having this opportunity in real time to sort of find this crowdsourced IP and bring that into your design, your product design, and push your design out the door so much faster than before. So that mechanism that as a creative class, we're finding new ways to work together that are not sort of restricted to the industrial age thinking, and open source and crowdsourcing are just two sort of examples of that. So I don't know if that answered your question directly, but that's sort of what comes to mind when we're talking about disruption in the product design life cycle.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's so interesting. How would you say are emerging technologies changing the prototyping phase of early product designs? How do they impact research up front, usability testing, once a prototype is developed?
So there's a couple pieces to that. First off, let's take the prototyping phase of product design. So you have an idea now, and as every designer knows, the best way to get high fidelity feedback from users is to have a high fidelity prototype. So the more information I can place in front of a user about the product that I'm asking for them to test out in some way, the better they'll be able to give me that sort of real world feedback. So if I give them a sketch, it's going to give me, you know, slightly lower, you know, much lower fidelity feedback than if I can give them a 3D printed object, which, you know, they might be able to handle. Or better yet, you know, your spinning motors and your, you know, you have some of your circuit boards in there, and you can actually have an interactive prototype, sort of the best part of that. So the cost of all of these things is, you know, approaching zero, really. So we can now prototype for a very low cost and iterate over those prototypes and get user feedback much earlier in the process than we ever could before. So you can do weekly testing and be tweaking the form of your, say you're designing a medical device for a certain disease type, and you can place that device in the hands of the users and see how they might use it. And you can iterate very quickly. So the emerging technology of 3D printing and really of additive fabrication, which is, you know, sort of the more technical term, that's enabling us to iterate more quickly and to do a better job with the user testing and feedback up front. And then once the prototype is actually, you know, getting closer and closer to your actual product, there are aspects of the prototyping process that you can leverage into production. And what I mean by that is there's, you know, certain types of circuit boards and certain types of prototyping materials. I mean, we've all heard of Arduino, right? You can use that to prototype, but you probably wouldn't want to be buying 10,000 Arduino boards to put into your first run of your product after you got some funding for it, because it would be far too expensive. So there are firms now that are creating these boards that you can use from prototyping into your initial production phase. So they can sort of make minor tweaks to that very same board that you've prototyped with. I'm thinking specifically of there's one product called Tessel, which is sort of just getting started. But those guys are very interesting because in theory they're offering a unique platform to both prototype and go and produce a product with. And I think that's a very powerful idea that I think other people will be, imitating very soon.
How's the ramp up to production scale manufacturing affected?
So I think it's an interesting question, because once you've gotten this product and you've started to get some people interested in it and you're able to sell it, moving from those initial amounts of, you know, maybe 5,000 or 10,000 pieces, and then into mass adoption, that's a really sort of difficult space to be in, because the economies of scale that you'd get from manufacturing, say, overseas in Asia, that's a lot of inside baseball still, and there's no sort of immediate sort of crowdsourcing or easy to leverage methodologies to get there. So there's actually a firm in the Boston area called Dragon Innovation, and I was lucky enough to talk to their CEO a couple of weeks ago, and part of what they're doing is facilitating the entrepreneur who has this initial product, and maybe they have some of them made already, but they want to get to that next level of production. So all of the logistics associated with having a global supply chain, those things are on the consulting side, you know, sort of being handled by Dragon Innovation. But they're also looking very much to start systemizing that into software tools. So imagine a set of software tools that, you know, you could sort of take your initial production runs and start mapping those to manufacturers overseas who could do more complex and sort of difficult production that would get you those economies of scale, and so you could produce your product at a lower wow. cost. So that's still nascent. I mean, the dream, of course, is that you could do something like they do in the printing industry, which is print on demand, right? So we're all sort of familiar with that from our experiences in publishing. But the idea is no book will ever go out of print now, because you can always have this PDF file sitting in the cloud somewhere. And you know, I order a book off of Amazon, and, you know, if someone has been smart or generous enough to have that laid out in electronic format, it can be pumped through this print on demand system. And a week later, I have that book, you know, in my hand. I think Lulu.com does that mm-hmm. for a lot of products. So imagine that on the product side. So I know that I really enjoyed this coffee maker that was made in, you know, Lord knows, like, you know, the early 2000s. I mean, having the reference designs available that could be 3D printed and assembled in a factory, you know, maybe in the United States somewhere and shipped to me. Now, we're not to that point yet. And so it's really interesting question how you get from these, you know, these initial production quantities to sort of, you know, the economies of scale, or whether you go in the completely opposite direction and look for solutions that will be more about generating these products on demand.
That's amazing. What do you think are the considerations for issues like sustainability, environmental impact, and quality control with these technologies?
So that's a sort of love of mine, or a passion of mine, is thinking about the product life cycle, not just at the, you know, so-called, you know, early stages, and thinking of new product ideas, which obviously designers love to do, but also thinking about what is the total life cycle of a product all the way into maturity and decline, right? So as Americans, maybe we don't like to think about maturity and decline, right? Because it indicates, you know, something's being discontinued and ended, and we like new beginnings, right? But there's this some very interesting trends, which you know, I'll talk about one, which is the idea of being able to disassemble products, right? So you've got these products with pieces that can be easily taken apart at the end of their life cycle. So you're actually thinking about, you know, if I'm using certain types of plastics or certain types of chips, how can I take these apart very quickly and get them into the recycling stream? And that's sort of admitting to yourselves that people aren't going to own your product forever. Another aspect to that is sort of the material science that goes into making these products. So asking questions up front about, you know, whether these products are going to be biodegradable, and what does the total carbon footprint look like for a product over the course of its
sure.
entire existence. Mm-hmm. So a very, very sort of mundane but interesting, well, can it be mundane and interesting? a mundane example are the jeans we wear every day, right? So the initial amount of energy that goes into making the jeans is maybe not that much, but over the course of an entire lifetime of a pair of jeans, you're using lots of energy for the washing and drying and, you know, these cycles over and over again. So the carbon footprint for owning a pair of jeans can be quite, you know, quite large when you take that across,
wow.
you know, an entire wardrobe. So there are actually, I've seen recommendations and I'm probably mischaracterizing, but, you know, of not washing your jeans all that often. Like that's kind of the right way to do them, according to some in the jeans industry, both for, you know, maintaining the quality of the fabric and also not using so much natural resources. But think about that attitude applied to your electronics, right? So if I could find ways to use maybe less power to be charging my iPhone, or less water in washing my dishes, et cetera, et cetera. So those are all issues that I think designers very much need to care about, and really at all stages of the product design lifecycle.
Absolutely. It's so much to think about. What do you think are some practical recommendations for companies looking at new ways of approaching product design and development? especially those planning to introduce emerging technologies into existing product portfolios?
So I'm going to introduce this idea that is, you know, I've probably cribbed from smarter people than myself, but this idea of a product as dialogue, right? So we think of a product, sometimes we think of in a very consumer culture, almost as something that's used and disposed of, right? So I use it for a while, and then the next thing comes along, and then it's better, so I, you know, substitute that thing in and get rid of the old thing. But what if products and sort of the designers who made them sort of had an ongoing dialogue with users, which is fully possible now if you consider connected products in the Internet of Things. So you know, take my washer, for instance. What if, you know, GE could push an update to my washer to improve the usage of water, electricity, et cetera, so it's more efficient based on, you know, whatever the spin cycles are. And at the same time, they are also monitoring how I'm using the washer. So they can say, oh, okay, well, you look like you're a very wasteful person, so we're going to, you know, recommend that you download this water throttling, you know, algorithm, so you control your water usage that way, because we can see that you're always using a full load, but you're actually only putting in a tiny bit of clothing into it, and we can kind of tell that from the sensors. So that's a long way of saying that the possibilities with the Internet of Things and connected devices and connected products are for having this ongoing relationship with the user. So for companies looking to incorporate these technologies, I think it's a worthwhile question to ask, you know, how well do you know your users? How well do you know what they want? And how can you better sort of facilitate that using, leveraging all these emerging technologies and being able to innovate continuously, not just to get a product into the hands of the consumer, but really to, you know, be involved with them over the course of the lifetime of that product. So that's one thing that's kind of on my mind. Another thing is to really, and I think this is important for companies of all kinds, really, is to start establishing learning as a core competency and a practice within the company. So we all are absorbing information and learning things and trying to introduce innovations into, you know, our companies when we can. But capturing that information and being able to share that information with others in your company and then really build that knowledge base, that's not a strong suit for a lot of companies. So when we're looking at emerging technologies, I think everything's changing so quickly that this idea of establishing learning and knowledge capture as something that's core to a company and its innovation practice, I think that's very necessary. And I'm no expert on that, but I know it's needed. And then finally, I would say up teams that are cross-disciplinary and have people who wouldn't normally be talking to each other talk to each other. So I know there are a lot of institutions that are already starting to do that. One of those example I like to cite is the Wyss Institute in Boston, that makes a habit of creating these cross-disciplinary teams, precisely because it provides different perspectives on a problem set. So if I were starting a company and looking to incorporate emerging technologies into a product line, the first thing I would do is you know, find the scientists, engineers, designers, what have you, ethnographers, and put them together in a room from different areas of the company and make sure they were talking to each other. So I think that might be more of a cultural recommendation and maybe more of a soft skill, but I think that's really vital to continuing innovation.
Absolutely, absolutely. This is excellent. Really, some fantastic insights from a designer's perspective in the ways in which emerging technologies are disrupting the product life cycle. Companies really need to start looking at new ways of approaching the product design and development. Jonathan, again, I really appreciate your time today. And again, we're talking with Jonathan Follett, O'Reilly author, editor of Designing for Emerging Technologies, and principal of Involution Studios. Great stuff. Thank you for joining us today. And we appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.